This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:37 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar with Keith Kam. We are turning our attention now, though, to what's happening over in Russia, because Moscow is reeling from the deadliest terrorist attack in the country since 2004. Last Friday, gunmen suspected to be affiliated with the Islamic State stormed a concert venue, the Kroka City Hall in the capital city, in an assault that has killed more than 137 lives so far and injured hundreds of others.
The attack comes a week after President Vladimir Putin was re-elected for a fifth term. Russia has charged four men, it says, attacked the concert hall, and all four appeared to have been beaten, and one was brought to court in a wheelchair. They were charged with committing an act of terrorism.
Now, earlier this month, the U.S. Embassy in Russia had issued a warning about potential extremist plans to target large gatherings in Moscow, which the Russian administration purportedly dismissed. How will these events impact the political and security strategy of Moscow moving forward? For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Dr. Alexei Muraviev, Associate Professor for National Security and Strategic Studies at Curtin University. Alexei, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Can you talk to us about the perpetrators of this attack? Islamic State has claimed responsibility for it, but what would motivate the IS to attack Russia?
Well, this is something that remains a mystery, because on one hand you see all the indicators of a attack that could be described as carried out by a radical Islamist organization, and I also want to make a clause simply saying we shouldn't be obviously affiliating any form of politically motivated violence with any form of religion. All four perpetrators that were apprehended are Tajik nationals, and in this sense it falls into line with an understanding that a branch of the ISIS that operates in Afghanistan has an active recruitment drive also across former Soviet Central Asia, and a significant number of Tajik radicals joined their ranks. So in this sense, it aligns with that. The fact that ISIS claimed responsibility, well, in my personal view, it doesn't really tell me a lot, because in recent years, ISIS was claiming responsibility for any single hiccup that was happening simply because they suffered serious blows in Syria and Iraq, and this is their way of trying to regain the attention and obviously regain the recruitment drive and continue to engage in propaganda. So I would be treating the fact that ISIS released statements about the attack with a degree of caution. Having said that, obviously they provided details that could only be available to them by someone who is affiliated with them. But why am I still questioning it? It's because at least in the first instance, it seems like none of the terrorists, first of all, explained that their actions were driven by ideological or any other motives, which is traditional with respect to ISIS-inspired attacks. One clearly admitted, and in the first minutes after being captured, that he was driven by the financial incentive. And whilst ISIS was paying for his to its members, but when they normally go on camera, when they make declaratory statements, they try to provide some sort of ideological or mutilated religious explainer of why have they done this. And in this context, it's really difficult to pinpoint why all of a sudden Moscow would become their target, because after the invasion of Ukraine, Russia minimized its counterterrorism operations in the Middle East and Syria simply because all the resources are now being thrown towards Ukraine. Even in the context of the Gaza situation, Russia actually has taken side of the Palestinians rather than than Israel. So in this sense, it's difficult to work out what was the trigger point for ISIS to target Moscow in this sense. And finally, and this is something that Russia's President Vladimir Putin stated overnight, the attack occurred in the holy months of Ramadan, which also raises questions whether it is something that is really inspired by someone who claims to be a Muslim, but as we can also appreciate, you know, those who claim to be Muslims and yet act as terrorism, they would probably disregard these considerations. But clearly the Russians are developing a narrative that one way or another, even if it's it has the markings of an Islamic type terrorist operation, they still try to finger point at the Ukrainians.
Alexei, there were reports that the U.S. had warned Russia about the possibility of a terrorist attack, citing their own intelligence, and Moscow appeared to dismiss this, and it still happened. In your view, why do you think the Russian authorities didn't take these warnings more seriously?
Look, I think that actually highlights the fact that there is a serious problem when it comes to fighting the global war on terror between countries that have ideological or geopolitical differences, because the way how it came across, and yes, a couple of weeks ago, there were warnings published by the U.S. and U.K. authorities about places of mass gatherings in Moscow. And according to some Russian reports, the Russians did take some preemptive action, and they actually thought that the attack was supposed to take place in the same venue 2 weeks ago, when there were a sequence of public performances that attracted considerable number of people, but heightened security regime at that time allegedly prevented terrorists from carrying out the attacks. But I think it also highlights this ongoing mistrust that exists between the law enforcement and intelligence agencies in Russia and the United States toward one another. And it's not something that became a recent phenomenon, obviously, in the context of the war in Ukraine and the worst state of Russia-U.S. relations. If we take back the situation with the Boston Marathon bombing back in 2016, the Russians tipped the Americans about the Tsarnaev brothers, the perpetrators of this attack of Chechen origins, and apparently the United States authorities did not act on Russia's intelligence, which was shared with them. As a result, the perpetrators successfully carried out the attack. And I think in both cases, it was a case of mutual suspicion. Why are you telling me this story if I don't trust you as a partner, if I don't consider you as a reliable partner? But as we see in both cases, innocent people died.
Alexei, there were also reports that from concert goers who say that the security at the concert hall was kind of lax. Is this a suggestion that maybe Moscow has not, as maybe shorthanded, has deployed too many troops to Ukraine to fight the war there, that they've forgotten security back home?
No, I think there is plenty of security personnel around Moscow, but serious questions were raised about the security regime in the Crocus Hall, also because according to new information, the security on site was managed by a private security company. They didn't have any lethal weapons. They only had like rubber buttons and tear gas, and there were only a few of them. But they also had rapid response group on site that from the same private security company that had access to lethal firearms. But this rapid security group did not react to the incident. And I think there's going to be lots of serious questions asked about the security regime already. I think push been made to ensure that any places of mass gatherings that may attract few or more thousand people should have armed guards on site. So on one hand, Moscow has been living through heightened security regime because of the war with Ukraine. But on the other hand, the Moscovites didn't see a terror incident of that magnitude since probably the Medvedeva bomb in one of Moscow's airport back in 2011. So when you don't have a terror attack occurring over a sequence of years, obviously you start feeling a bit lax and relaxed. So I think there's going to be a lot of lessons learned from that for the Russians also, because it was pretty obvious for them that they had to actually take extra precautions.
We have about 1 minute left, Alexei. What are you going to be watching next? How will Russia respond to these attacks? And how might it affect Russian strategy in the war in Ukraine, since you said that Putin still insists on linking it to Ukraine somehow?
I don't think it's going to be any brainer. I think Putin is trying to develop a narrative, eventually accusing Ukraine's political leadership, or at least leadership of its security apparatus, of being the masterminds behind the attack. And once he would publicly disclose that narrative, I think Russia would only it would only reinforce Russia's continuous attacks on Ukraine. I don't see any other way at this point in time.
Alexei, thanks very much for speaking to us. That was Dr. Alexei Muraviev, Associate Professor at Curtin University, walking us through the aftermath of the terrorist attack in Moscow earlier this week. And also, I'd be curious to see how this impacts Putin's reputation, I suppose, domestically. This comes just after he won re-election for a fifth term. I'm wondering if this will galvanize more dissent towards him.
It kind of seems like he doesn't waste a good crisis when it comes to this issue.
All right, we'll be watching closely what happens next. 7:48 in the morning, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll come back to discuss the recently released Securities Commission 2023 annual report. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.